Good morning, everybody.
Greetings.
Did we decide on like woeful Wednesday? I can't remember what we decided Wednesday is.
Woeful Wednesday. Wonderful Wednesday.
Yeah, that's really what it is.
That's really what, especially because we're both wearing different glasses today.
Yeah.
my glasses. I think that should be the topic.
Yeah. Why do they look different? My case, I've had these for a while. I went in to get my eyes checked for new glasses. And this nice young eye doctor said, a man your age needs progressive lenses, which are fancy bifocals. And they make me feel weird because it's all different. And so I finally started wearing them to accept my elder status in the world. I'm Gandalf now.
I think it's just because he realized you were actually a liberal, and so you need progressive lenses.
Before I had radical ones, and they just kept on like getting up. Each lens would get upset at each other, and they'd just split and fall off my face. This line on the side versus the anarchist. Anyways, that's this. I'm getting lost in the weeds.
Getting lost. And then I just wore my different reading glasses because you were wearing different glasses.
Yeah, you didn't want to feel left out.
Exactly.
I understand that feeling.
Which is kind of the story of my life, feeling left out.
So. Sad. I'm just imagining a tall little child with a beard just being sad in the corner.
Maybe that's why I was being left out, because I was a little child with a beard.
I mean, how do you imagine someone you've only known as a middle-aged man with a beard as a child? You can't.
Well, that just shows the limits of your imagination, I think.
I mean, that ties in with this theme of discernment.
It does. Actually.
Let's use that as a segue. Dan, I realized we usually pregame by talking about what we're going to talk about, but we didn't. We talked about glasses and robot birds. Surprise, surprise.
Now we're just stalling.
No, but let's just grab that. Let's use that imagination thing.
Let's
part
use
of the
it.
Part of the challenge with decision making versus discernment, we've already kind of touched on this, is when you approach things with the decision making and ideas, you're dealing with known information. You're assuming you have all the information you need, more or less, and you have to sort through it to make the best decision. And that seriously and astonishingly undervalues the possibility that you don't know everything you need to know.
And
underplays the fact that, I say this all the time, like we're very much, our lives are very deterministic, generally speaking, because all these structures out there limit our choices and they imprint themselves in our minds as kind of inner structures, which also limit choices, the cop in the head. And so the amount of reasonable choices you might feel like you have in a moment is kind of bound. And the powerful people have limited that. So the odds are you can't actually make what we would think of as a free or liberatory choice.
Right.
Unless you find a way to subvert the system or have a different imagination for how things could be. Enter discernment. Yeah.
Yeah, and so you not only figure that you have all the information that you need, but you also are accepting all of the systemic limitations, many of which you're not even aware of, as just sort of fact. Like, we have to do this, right? Or in the church, there's the great comment, we've never done it that way before, or we've always done it this way. Right. And so that's your starting point. And now already you've narrowed the world to a tremendous degree.
Yeah.
And then Gregory here has got a comment. Gus has a comment too. But
let's get Gus's in, because it's more important. They're like baby pigeons. Have you ever seen a baby bearded man? Yes.
That's right. This is one of the proofs for robot birds, is that one never sees a baby pigeon.
It's true, as people say that.
That's one of the things. Have you ever seen a baby pigeon?
Gregory writes, discernment centers God. Decision-making centers us. Discernment engenders humility. Decision-making engenders hubris. I think that's largely true. And there's something, discernment actually is not about just discerning God's desire, but it's actually part of you figuring out what you actually want. Most people don't even know what they want. So like if you're doing a discernment process, it's getting at your deeper longings, where, and that's where you end up finding more where God's longings are, because they're all interwoven with each other.
Yeah, but this does, you know, bring up a key point that I don't think we made really clear on Monday yet, is that so whenever you enter any kind of decision-making process, there's always kind of lurking behind it this question of kind of why are we making this decision, or what is it that we're trying to decide or uncover, right? And you know, it may be like what's best for me, or what's best for my family, or what's best for the city, you know, or like with opening George Floyd Square, what's best for that space, right? And we rarely stop and say, oh, and so all of those things are one way or another centered on particular persons, groups of persons, different, you know, ideas, as we've been talking about it. And what discernment starts with is exactly what Gregory's talking about, is that the question is, what does God want? Now, there's all kinds of problems with that language, particularly in the fundamentalist world. And, you know, and then there are all kinds of people who are like, well, I don't believe in God, or I don't care about God, or whatever. So, you know, maybe another way of looking at this or talking about this, it's, you know, what is it that is going to create the most love, or what is it that's going to create the most human situation for everybody, right? Yeah. What is it that centers the best thing for all of creation, right? That might be another way. So maybe it's not just what centers what's best for all humans, but what's also best for the environment, right? And so it's a way of pointing towards what we might call, you know, a third thing, right? It's like the other voice in the room that we're not really hearing. And that's really what discernment starts with, right? And oftentimes you'll hear people say things like, well, I don't really care all that much what I want. It's what does God want? Now, again, you've brought up a very challenging problem with that, is that if you've got a very negative theology of desire, that can be very abusive.
And that's
right. And the paradox
endemic within Western, maybe Eastern, but Western Christianity for sure is just loaded up with that.
You know, and of course the paradox in discernment is that what God wants is also what's going to bring greatest life to people and to the environment. And so just even recognizing that that's your starting point is really important. Because again, in decision-making, people immediately jump in with both feet, arms, legs, everything with, okay, what's my idea and how am I going to get this done?
Yeah, and just to kind of circle back a little bit, and this connects with Carol's comment, which I'm going to share here. I read and posted this recently. Discipline is remembering what you want, sort of on point. Mm-hmm. And I want to dig at that a little bit before moving on, because there is within Western Christianity, Protestantism is baked in, especially if you're fundamentalist, the idea that Christianity is about submitting your will to the ultimate authority, and it's ultimately it's self-denial. Right. Mm-hmm. The idea of self-fulfillment is something that wild liberals do, and is how you get towards sin. Like that's kind of rather than assuming like they're, you know, and for evangelicals who may be listening, I'm going to cite C.S. Lewis because he's one of your saints. You know, he talked about in The Weight of Glory that the problem isn't that we desire too much, it's that we don't desire enough. We're like a child playing with mud pies, you know, in the sand when a holiday at sea is offered. That's how he puts it. And that's, you know, I don't like C.S. Lewis for a lot of stuff, but that's a great insight. The issue is, you know, we look at Jesus as an example of self-denial. Take up your cross and follow me, without really understanding the other part where it says, for the joy set before him, he took up the cross. There's something ultimately fulfilling, it's hard to say this, about Jesus on his way to the cross. It isn't just about submitting his self and will to God and self-denial as a purely negative act. So if you can't get to past that, discernment becomes almost impossible, because then it's about putting in all the data in a computer to figure out what God's will is. Bloop, 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 bloop. And then you figure out what God wants you to do and you just do it. And then it all becomes about exercising your will, which is also this other Western thing that's overinflated. The idea that you have much will to use to begin with anyway. And this is why I like what Carol said. Discipline is remembering what you want. So many things, like in life, you know, there's apps, there's programs you can spend $250 on where it's how to just get your discipline and will to do what you really want to accomplish. And really that psychologist, the more they study it, it's like, that's not, you can't force yourself to do stuff. That's not how you succeed at things. It's actually attending to what's underneath. It's your actual desires and under self-understanding and realizing that there's motives, there's something in it for you. You desire it. You have to kind of nurture that desire. Anyways, long-winded sermon done.
I got a few things to say too, but let's get to some of these other comments. Let's get back up to...
Yeah, Gregory. All decision-making should be provisional with an eye toward fresh revelation and insight.
Right. Yeah, and what that gets to is, which I mentioned on Monday, is this difference between discernment as a tool for decision-making versus a way of life.
Yeah.
Right? And so as the term discernment has gotten popular, people are just like, oh, well, this is just a spiritually sounding way of doing decision-making. And so one of the things I've seen over the last 15 years, which really cracks me up, is that in church gatherings, instead of saying, like, we're debating and voting, they now say we're discerning, but they're still debating and voting. Right? So this idea that discernment is just a decision-making tool is not true at all. It really is a way of life. And so we're always holding our understanding very loosely, and we're continuing to do this discernment reflection because we know that we don't know everything, and we know that things change. And right, and so there's fresh revelation, there's fresh insight, and there has to be this open process space to allow that to have some influence.
You know, it's you know, in spiritual direction, I'll have people kind of, they'll come to me and they have a decision and around vocation. So they use the word vocation, and usually it's tied up with a job. And so they get a little confused when I start kind of helping them think about vocation as more of a intrinsic thing. Like, who are you? Like, what is it about you? What's the unique way in which you reflect the presence of God in the world? I'll like talk about that sort of thing. And it's like, doesn't seem have to do anything with the job. And then at a certain point I'll say, really, in a weird way, you could do any of the jobs that make sense to you. And if you're grounded in your vocation, it'll be okay. But if you just pick the right job without really discerning your vocation, something that's deeper than this, you won't know if you're actually, you won't find fulfillment in it. And so those things are related, but they're not the same. It's just like decision-making. Like, you can, discernment is a, has a place in decision-making, but that's not the, it's not what it's about. But again, like everything, like, and you know, you brought up the for years we had meetings, like consensus decision making meetings at the Mennonite Worker. It was just all us arguing and coming to the lowest common denominator, and we called it discernment meetings. And but sometimes the spirit had nothing to do with what we decided, which is so common. Maria brings up a great point. Too many choices can lead to freezing and having difficulty making any choice, where circumstances make choices for us. Yeah.
Well, yeah, absolutely, and especially if the process for picking between all of these choices is this kind of what is the best idea, mm-hmm. as opposed to this internal, both individually and collectively, sense of what is bringing us to life.
Yeah.
Right. And so that because, you know, again, I mentioned this list of 30 things that people get in a meeting when they do brainstorming. If you go through that list of 30 things, you will often find that like 28 of them, you actually have no interest in doing.
Even though they make sense.
Yeah. Even though they're good, they're fine. And somebody else in the group may want to do some of those, but when we're disconnected from our embodiment, and Gregor brings this up later about the connection to spiritual practice, if we're disconnected from our embodiment and we're just judging these choices based on, is this a good idea? Then, yeah, it becomes very overwhelming and very freezing. But as soon as we look inside and we start going, well, okay, does that really bring life for me, you know, doing this nice thing? And if we can be honest with that and say, no, it doesn't, then oftentimes we can eliminate many, many of these choices really quickly. But it requires that connection.
Susan says, discernment from a secular perspective may be cultivating more self-awareness to get at implicit attitudes, unconscious biases. Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah. And from a spiritual perspective too, right? Yeah, that self-awareness, kind of what I was just talking about in terms of, am I paying attention to my embodiment, right? Am I really aware of, so when I think about doing activity X, you know, am I like excited and thrilled by it, or do I get this like sick, exhausted feeling? And again, am I willing to admit that, right? Mm-hmm. And then it starts to become very clear what's going on.
You're right. So I came that they may have life and that in abundance. Nothing about creedal or confessional rectitude or doctrinal purity. Well, and this right is now. Where, again, like, we are bombarded in our society with feelings of ought. Mm-hmm. Or as I had a therapist once, who said, we shit all over ourselves, which is that eloquently stated. And so we feel this pressure to do these things and we don't check in. And so that's why part of, like, you know, what you were talking about, Dan and Maria was talking about, that overwhelming feeling is because we don't even know how to access our body, like what we want. Part of the mm-hmm. thing that like gets sad about self-care at its best is about attending to that stuff so that you are aware of, if you're hydrated, how you're feeling, you're checking in with all kinds of levels of your own sense of existence so that you can live in the world in a way that's free and refreshing. But oftentimes it becomes about pampering because you're stressed out. Like, this is, again, sort of the twisted thing. Like, last week I posted this just bizarre thing that Jeff Bezos is recognizing, you know what? These people are stressed out, so I'm going to have these little Zen booths. They call them Amazon. And people can, like, people that are like, oh, I have calluses on my fingers from being overworked and I can't go to the bathroom enough. But he's like, you can take a 5-minute Amazon break in one of these little phone booth things where people sit in the dark and there's meditative like apps in there.
Yeah.
And so this, again, self-care becomes about attending to our stress so that we can then ultimately be more productive.
Right.
And that's how a lot of people approach discernment.
Yeah, you know, it'd be Amazon, like, let people go to the bathroom without fucking tracking their pee. I mean, that would be Amazon.
Would be also Amazon is if instead of Jeff Bezos going to space, he said, hey, workers, I will let you be owners of the company so that the workers can own the means of production. That would be Amazon.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, what a lot of this, from a kind of a theological anthropology point of view, gets at is, you know, where do we think God is? Mm-hmm. I mean, that may sound like a weird question here. You know, and Mark, you're always, you know, pointing us back towards, you know, are we thinking of God as this hierarchy, you know, God as the highest authority pyramid, right? Mm-hmm. And in that, of course, where is God? Well, God's far away up in the sky, you know, walking around on the dome of the sky, looking down and like zapping people if they don't do the right thing.
Yeah, that bastard.
But if God really is connected to us internally, right? Which, you know, the Holy Spirit, right, is what brings all of the things of God to us, right? And this is this fruits issue again. If God is the Spirit working in us, and if God is the Spirit of life, right? And this is where Christianity gets so weird. It's like, well, the Spirit of life comes through us. The Spirit of life is in us. But we're supposed to be grumpy and miserable, and everybody else maybe gets some goodies out of the Spirit of life coming through us. I mean, this just doesn't even make any sense at all. It's very, very twisted. Mm-hmm. Right? So if I am listening deeply to what the Spirit of life is bringing in and to and through me, of course I'm going to feel that life as well. And, you know, this doesn't mean some airy fairy, I'm happy all the time, everything is easy, blah, 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 blah. But what it does mean is that I am experiencing that life as well as I'm engaged in the work and the movement that the Spirit is doing in the world.
Airy fairy.
Airy fairy.
I'm going to use that more in regular
time. I need to go to my Amazon tent.
Yes. Gus writes, hey Maria, I had a classmate in college doing study abroad from Ethiopia who went to the grocery store to buy laundry detergent and came back without any. Too many choices, just became paralyzing.
Yeah, that happens to me in the grocery store all the time. You know, it's like try buying plain yogurt in the grocery store.
They have that weird new, like, there was Greek yogurt. Now there's the Scandinavian yogurt that looks like Greek yogurt, but it's Scandinavian. And I haven't been afraid to buy it because I'm like, what's it?
We don't need 200 different kinds of yogurt.
Capitalism leads to choice. Gregory writes, discernment is inextricably linked to spiritual discipline, the ability to still yourself and listen to deep calling to deep. Again, this is another difference. Yeah. Like, a lot of people look at spiritual disciplines, they feel bad. Like, I don't pray every morning, I should feel bad. And they feel like it's something they ought to do, which there's some good in it, but it's not like this thing you have to do or God's going to be mad at you. It's this thing like, hey, maybe I should attend to life and desire, and I need to kind of cut out some of the distractions so I can be attentive even to myself. The fact that we feel guilty that we don't do that because we frame it as something we ought to do is strange and shows how alienated we are from ourselves. Stefan writes, ancient and early medieval Eastern Christian monks developed theories of decision-making in the context of avoiding sin and sinful decisions. Google Philokalia, stages of passion.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's one of the discernment practice traditions. This is one of the really sad things to me about church. I mean, we have a 2,000-year history of teachings about prayerful decision making. About how to do that in groups, how to do that individually, about what that looks like, the manifestations of it, the stages of it. I mean, all of these things. And yet, you know, it's as if none of that exists. And we don't form people in that. We don't form, you know, kids in that. We don't form families in that. And there's just all this wisdom that's kind of hidden away. I think there's some story about that lights under a bushel or something.
No, I'm going to let it shine. Gregory writes, what should we do? What can we do? What will we do? I don't know.
That's a good set of questions.
Series writes, what is bringing us to life is what needs to be the baseline of discernment. I mean, that's the Ignatian kind of thing, which, you know, kind of the one of the parents of modern discernment practices. And yeah, and that's not even an easy question. Like,
no.
And that's
no, I mean, all the time, people that I work with, you know, I'll just have them meditate on that question every day. What do I want? And again, when they start doing that, they're like, I have no idea.
You know? And one of the practices I like encouraging people to do sometimes, and I'll do sometimes for myself, it's from Elizabeth Liebert's book on discernment. It's a good text, The Art of Discernment. Yeah. And it's just to kind of be centered and silent and ask, what is it that I want right now in this minute or this moment? And it could be like, I'm hungry for a ham sandwich. And then you just kind of keep asking that question, and it brings you down underneath until you start realizing more of what's going on inside of you. And the way I like to think about it is it's shifting from desire to longing. Like, I think of longing as those deeper things that are truer than just simple desire. But we can't really get to that. And again, we get so hung up on pathologizing desire as a bad thing that we just avoid it. And we stop and we blame people, like, oh, that person made bad decisions because of their wayward desire. Well, maybe we need to stop and look what's underneath the desire. But we don't do that. That's not something that's encouraged in churches or spaces. We're told just to subordinate our will. Kathleen writes, I might be doing discernment wrong. I keep ending up with nothing as to what I want to do differently. Maybe you're enlightened.
But I would say that's not totally true, Kathleen. For example, in the fall, right, you went through a whole discernment reflective process about retiring. What did you want to do relative to these churches and the one that was endangering your life from the pandemic? So, So I don't know. Maybe in the important things in life, you are perfectly enlightened. And so then everybody who's listening should make a pilgrimage to Kathleen's house to find out what she's doing right.
Long after you're gone, I have dibs on your pinky bone because I can use it as a relic.
There we go. We will spread you around as relics.
That's very creepy. I'm sorry. Carol writes, or bringing us to peace or action. Begs the question, what is life?
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, it's potentially any of those things, right? So sometimes what brings us to life is doing nothing. Sometimes what brings us to life is doing something. But yeah, I mean, part of what is life-giving is a sense of peace. It can be potentially all those things.
Susan writes, Bezos, what a Duce. Yes. Yeah. He's not a great person. Carol writes, Amazon outhouse. I mean, yes, because that's the only place you can get away. If they give you more time to sit in the Amazon than they do to the bathroom, then I'm going to bring a bottle in there with me. I'm just saying. And it also fits. There's a pun there about it being a shitty idea. You know, we can workshop that. Julia writes, Mark just called God a bastard. Well, see, that's why I follow you guys. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. That's going to be quoted.
He called that quote.
Mark Vinstein, like,
or at least that image of God.
Yeah, I was kind of. Yeah. But you know, sure. You can. Yeah, sure. Lynn writes, deodorant shopping. It's bonkers. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And they trick you because I have all these ingredients, like maybe lavender is better for my armpits than mint. Because they say on the back, like, that there's natural, you know, properties. And they lie. None of that, you know, like, you can't have a scientist next to you all the time when you're shopping for things. So they, you know, it's just this bombarding of weird marketing that just is there to manipulate your sense of will.
No, I ended up just like standing there and staring with a vacant look at my face as I scan the shelves over and over and over again.
That's why if you go into the local Target in South Minneapolis that had been kind of wrecked during the George Floyd uprising. If you go in there, more often than not, you can see Dan weeping in the aisles. He's kind of like,
it's kind of fun.
People think he's a ghost. Catherine writes, I used to believe and was encouraged to think that God had a specific plan for me in any situation that I needed to precisely figure out. Hello, OCD. Yeah. And that's true. This is where you see these images of God connecting directly with mental health issues and making things really painful for folks. Recovering from that, it still blows my mind how many discernment situations have no and or many right answers, even ones that have that people have huge opinions about, like whether or not one should have kids.
Right. No, exactly. And that, you know, the psychotic warlord playing hide and seek with the right decision image is so powerfully toxic. Right. And the discernment model is actually completely different. Right. Like there are no right answers. Right. There's only the question of what is life giving for the community in the particular context that it's in, which creates a real sense of groundlessness, particularly among people that come out of that very violent, abusive image of God. It's terrifying.
Well, then you add this sense, and this is very common among conservative Christians, that you are so messed up by sinful nature that you can't even begin to discern what's life-giving. Therefore, you just need to discern what the Bible says for all times and do it. And then always question what you want and desire to the point where you think you're fundamentally messed up and should feel ashamed of yourself all the time. And so, of course, like then, you know, you have the OCD piece, then all of a sudden you're connecting with anxiety and depression, exacerbating it, and then you feeling depressed all the time becomes reinforcing evidence that you're a broken piece of crap. So this is just no wonder people are leaving the church in increasing rates all the time now. At the very place we should be discerning desire and love and longing and joy and peace becomes the source of misery and self-hatred. It just drives me bonkers. Literally sometimes. Susan writes, it's also interesting that attitudes, thoughts, behaviors influence each other in both directions, doing and practical acts as a means of discerning. Yes.
Yeah.
This is that active, reflective kind of cycle. Yeah.
Exactly. It's the constant back and forth and continuing to pay attention. Right. And yeah, this is why this idea that, oh, I'm going to do discernment, I'm going to figure out the answer, and then I'm never going to pay attention again. It's like, no, that's not discernment.
Kathleen, or Susan writes, Kathleen, I feel that you are doing so well with the circumstances you've been dealt.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Amen. Maria writes, starting out, I think of the Hippocratic Oath of doing no harm. That has limited my choices a lot. And I think that's a good way of, like, we're not saying that every decision, I just want to make this clear for people that are listening, that every decision has to be open, start with a clean slate. Sometimes it makes sense, like, I'm not going to consider violent or painful options in my decision-making process, or I'm going to think about fruits of the Spirit or what's kind. Like, that's all part of the discernment process. So you're right. I think starting with a no harm is an amazing place, and I wish our politicians did that as their starting point for decision-making. This has been super helpful to me today. Thank you to you both. Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks, Leah.
Susan writes, bingo, Mark, I can't do that shit anymore. Are we still talking about the Amazon?
That's all the church stuff you were just talking about.
I know. I wanted to tie it back to the outhouse thing, you know, because I'm funny that way.
All right. It's been great
conversation, everybody. Thank you for chiming in.
Really appreciate everyone. And, go to your Amazon booth now. The clock is counting. You have 2 minutes and 34 seconds left.
Yep. We'll see you on Fascism Friday.
Bye.
Bye.